let's get out of this room that is so cold. Honourable members, in terms of the discussions that we had, there's one particular clause, if I'm right. There's one particular clause where, I think it's 32.
32A.
Where I want the attention of the state law advisor. And the department is distracting me. There's one particular clause, honourable members, where I call it, it's fuzzy. So they don't have this way or that way with it. And there was a few suggestions that came out. I wanted to find out from the legal people, first of all, as we sit here now, have you been able to give some thought and put something to us, or what other suggestion are you making? Dr. Lloyd, I know you were speaking aloud earlier. Yeah. I'm not sure if what you spoke aloud was shared amongst yourselves. I know, if I'm correct, honourable members, that was the one sort of a big sticky point, if I can call it. There were others that you agreed to disagree. There were others that we felt we need to move to another process. Do you want to say something, Dr. Luke? Honourable members, that's a correct summary, no?
Yeah.
Chairperson Snippets, referring to the 32A1 wording, I was saying to Advocate Bossoff that we see maybe if the committee wants us to relook, and that's the decision, that we go back and look at the less clumsy phrasing, that we might have lost something from what we had in the original clause to the proposed amendment, and it's sub 1, the 32A sub 1, so we might have lost the sense that you, the obligation is on you as the employer or whoever to go and check. And if you find something that's amiss, or if you've employed the person and you then find that the person has actually lied, then you refer it to SACWA. There's a term in the original clause that we had which says, and if not, so after they've checked and done, and if not, then refer such qualification. So I was saying to Advocate Boyce that maybe we lost that, which would have made it then clearer that SACWA won't be having to cope with the entire deluge of every application, but only those where an employer finds the employee has lied, and then they must refer it to SACWA, or if they're going to finally appoint a board or whatever they want. So that was my thinking there, Chair.
Anything, Ms. Arnold? You're not...
not yet, Chair. I'm still reading.
Anything, Ms. Isaac?
Yes, Chair, but we just need maybe a little bit of time, because I think that's what I also picked up, is that when one's supposed to do this. Because as it reads now, it seems that this is a general requirement. So we just need to apply our minds as to bring in that the point as to when this action must be taken in, because it doesn't realize that now. So if the committee would just give us a little bit of time to think about it, to apply our minds collectively, we would really be grateful for that.
To my right, to my left?
Yes.
From my right to my left?
To your left.
Thank you. It's good for the legal people, but the political decision must be taken. What do we want? Do we want it that if a university has just awarded a degree to somebody, and that person has applied for an honours degree, that that university must now, you know, involve SAQWA. When that university knows it's a legitimate first degree, we have just awarded that degree, the student is just continuing with his academic career, his or hers. Is that really what we want? We as a committee must say, yes or no. Do we really want all people that apply for a job to be reported to SAQWA with a summary of all their qualifications? Or is it only the shortlisted people? Or is it only in cases where we believe that there may be, you know, some mischief, to use Advocate Boshoff's favorite term? These are all political decisions which, quite frankly, I don't believe we should leave to the legal advisors to make. And I do not hear at this point in time that political guidance, that political direction under which the legal advisors must then go and formulate. Thank you.
Bazoli?
Okay, I just want to make an additional point about the obligation placed upon the employer or the university or whatever. is it normal to place the obligation for detecting criminality on somebody who is offering you a job? And not only how are you placing that onus on that person, but you are going to punish them if they don't do it. Now, would the same apply, say, to a criminal? Let's say, are you obliged when somebody applies for a job to check whether they have a criminal record on some criminal database, to check whether they're a paedophile, or any other crime that person may have committed? If not, what is it about the qualification requirement that makes it okay for us to now place, make the person criminally liable if they don't check the qualifications on the SAQWA database of somebody who applies to them for a job? I think that shifts the onus away from the person who's actually committing the fraud, which is what I would advocate and why I think this clause should be deleted altogether. It shifts the onus away from that person to somebody who wants to offer a job or offer a place in a university. They suddenly become liable for the crime of somebody else and for not checking that that person has committed a crime. So I find this an ethically very, very dodgy and again, that is not a legal question, it's an ethical question. Who do you find liable when a crime is being committed? And to find the person who's offering a job, who is actually innocent of the crime, to find them innocent, responsible, or guilty of a crime, to me is a distortion of our values as a society. We shouldn't be finding the employer sending ABSA, human relations officer or whatever,
CEO.
To jail, or CEO, yes, CEO it would be.
Maria Ramos
to jail because her firm offered a job to somebody who was a crook. That is, to me, a totally upside down way of doing things. So, thank you.
Honourable Killian, this is Jack. That is not the intention. The intention is to make sure that a person who is a crook and who gets away being appointed and then is found out to be a crook, to just resign or be dismissed and goes to another institution and be appointed with a falsified or fraudulent qualification. So as soon as an institution has become aware that that person is a crook, that person must be reported. And I think that is what we need to achieve. Because in the end, I mean, I hear what Honorable Bazzoli is, what she's saying, but I mean, FICA laws, the banks and institutions all fulfill a role to try to expose fake people and fraudulent people who are, yeah, well, it didn't always work, but let's, I mean, you know, the point is
So clearly, as a society, if she says it doesn't sort of reflect the values, I think it does. It does, because public and private institutions have a role to play. And so here, what we need to achieve is a very pragmatic approach. We're not saying if you're having 300,000 applications, you must check all 300,000. And if we look at the original wording, it was saying that they must check. So they have to, an obligation to check on the National Learner Database or inquire about it. And then, if not, and that is what Dr. Lloyd has referred to. And I think we've lost that in the rewording. But what we also don't have there is the issue of prior to appointment. Or once after appointment has been, that needs to be reported. And then Honourable Van der Westhuizen argues that, yes, certainly, we could build in the exemption, once an education institution has awarded a degree, obviously that could be exempted from going through the whole route. But yeah, I don't think we can achieve the eradication of the scourge of fraudulent qualification, unless we make sure that everybody plays ball. Unfortunately, very often, it's easier for institutions in the private sector to just dismiss, and the person goes off and wanders on to another appointment. And we can't allow that to continue. Thank you.
Yes?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Only one word for me now, that this bill, or maybe the section we are talking about, does not seek to say there will be no trespassers of the law. But it is for regulation purposes. So that everybody who acquired whatever it is called, whether certificate or degree, must be known. Isn't it that when, let me just give this example of NSFAS. To say you can't give a loan to unknown students. What is required is that you must have a database of all the students. You must know who reside where, so that you are able to track whether they are students who are not registered but claiming that they are not funded. So I think relatively it is just like that. I mean, you have an employer who will have employees who will sometimes be given a job to do as their job description, only to find that the employer is not accountable to the employee, who sometimes will be dismissed without any reason, citing the fact that this person does not qualify. Unless if I'm confused, Chairperson, but I think this exercise is giving us that latitude to say we must know our people, we must know our employers, we must know our employees as to whether they really comply with the law of well with the law of the Republic in any way. So I think that is my understanding on these things, chapters.
I want to ask us to come to a decision on what we are saying needs to be done with the clause. I also don't want us to confuse the clause with a range of other things. So Honorable Zoli says, I've heard more than one thing, but the one thing that I've heard, the other thing that I've also heard, says, no, I don't want the clause at all. But then I also hear...
Or change it to may rather than must.
I hear that also. So I want us to, what I want us to start narrowing it down to that. And then Honorable van der Westhuizen, also raised a range of things, and I also want to narrow it down to, because I think we can debate this till 2 o'clock, but and I think we all agree we have debated this and many of the other clauses for quite a long time. So whatever we decide will land up with the legal people. So if we decide we don't want it will land up with them and they must come right. If we decide it remains as is, they're not going to write any further. If we say we add, subtract, of course it then will land up with them. So I and then Honorable Killian says there is something that is missing in how you formulated it, because we agree, go back and look at this clause and do all of it, and then you brought all of this back. Now I want to put all of that into words of what all of that is. So I'm asking you now, Honorable Members, that there's one suggestion that says take it completely out. Do we agree with that?
No.
Yes. We do not agree with that.
We don't agree that we must do that.
Yes.
Then there was another suggestion that says we must take must out and put may in. Do we agree with that?
Yes.
No, Chair. I do not agree.
Then there was another suggestion that said there's something that is missing. I must represent, I'm not saying your words verbatim. And I'm not going to repeat what you have said, what the sentences must be, other words must be. Then there was that suggestion that there was something that was not carried over sufficiently that represent some of the thoughts that have come out. And I now ask the members, you say no, we must not let the clause go. What do we do with the clause? That's where I am, Honorable Mavunda.
Yes, Chair, I think we need to look at what is it that missing. What is it missing? But retain that clause so that we are able to say this is what the input we need to infect in the clause. Thank you.
I'll come to you on the roof under this later.
From
from my perspective, I would say, let's retain the word must. Because if we say must, it becomes obligatory to all participants. And after being sanctioned to respond to a certain query.
Where I want to follow, where are you now?
I'm 32A.
Yes.
I will not follow
the line.
Yeah. I'm saying, I'm agreeing with the word must, that it should remain. It becomes obligatory to all persons that are involved in this. If we take it to be an offense, we can't say you may, because maybe advocate will correct me. You can't challenge it, because now it's either you accept or you do not accept the offense.
Honorable Van der Westhuizen.
Thank you, Chair. Can I say what I believe we definitely do not want to achieve?
Yes.
And the first one is to inhibit employment, to make it harder for employers, or put another step in the employment process whereby you must now submit the summary of all the applicants' qualifications. We've lost enough jobs in this country already. The second one is we also do not want to inhibit access to skills, training and education. And I'm concerned that what we have currently before us is exactly going to achieve that. My honourable colleague referred to FICA. To this very day, I can't understand, we've only got a few banks that must pick up people. I don't know how, what you've experienced, but they struggle to deal with the FICA legislation. A close family member of mine, account was recently frozen when the person submitted all the documents earlier this year needed for him to be FICA. And that is the sometimes unintended consequences of legislation. And I plead with you, please, let's not have unintended consequences by passing this bill. Thank you.
Honorable Killian.
I
can tell you, I sold my house and then the money went into the account. Yeah, I had some rough people on the phone that forced me to explain, where do you get this money from? Speaker.
Yes, no, we all have challenges. Jefferson, I think that the problem in this section does not lie with a must refer issue. By the way, if we look at the old formulation, at the top it referred, you know, the left column of page 8, it refers to referral of qualification or past qualification not under the records database to SACWA for verification and evaluation. In other words, it's only those where there is a query about it. And I don't think we capture that. The second point that I want to make is what we are unintentionally doing here. The word which is presented to them for purposes of study. Now that will open the floodgates. Because if people are applying for a job, or if and you are part of the 300,000 or 250,000 applying for a job, you are presenting your qualification. It means all of those must be. So it is not upon presentation, but upon appointment, that there must be verification. And that includes, and I want to know, that this covers all pub, public entities or boards where we've had funny appointments, chairperson, let's not kid about it. People who should not have claimed to have been qualified, I mean, let's not forget the chairperson of the SABC board and the COO of the SABC. So it is not upon presentation upon application, it is upon appointment. And or prior to appointment, or shortlisting, or whatever. And then I think we should differentiate between employer, public and private, and education institutions. Because education institutions, they must do it, but I think they do it as a matter of course. But just to make sure that when a person is applying for another degree, and you have a degree from another institution, you obviously need to provide such, and if you fail, or if you present a fake or a fraudulent qualification, then you have to be reported. So what is the intention of this? It is to make sure that we criminalize the pervasive trend, but we must not make it impossible to implement. And I think in the process, can we differentiate between this, and can we make sure that we don't make it upon, you know, the presentation as such, but upon appointment, so that you don't take everything on board. If we do that, Chair, but the must be made, because otherwise we defeat the purpose.
So, honourable members, honourable from the best days on says that the intention must never be to mitigate, I mean to not mitigate, to go against the grain of our, I'll add my own word, our NDP objectives of making sure that whatever we do in the process must not lead to further unemployment and further skills flight, or skills development, as you say. Now, is it not possible to accommodate that? Because I think whenever we write legislation, we always make sure that the legislation vertically and horizontally are being taken care of, and they must. Look, you don't always get it right that it has an unintended consequences. That's life. You know, you're not going to have a perfect something all the time. But would it be wise to say, for example, in a sort of a regulation thing, that it must not have that, I'm not saying the proper words, that it must not have that, it must not lead towards that. I remember one of the submissions where the person said the students had to wait till thy kingdom come. And then that meant that those students obviously could not get into the world of work. And that was one of the main reasons why we took the 30-day provision into the amendment bill also. Now that's sort of like a clear example of where a student would be, well, the person might not be a student anymore, but where that person could not go any further into the economy. So I don't think that, my own view is, I don't think there's anything wrong to say that whatever we do, we must not cause any unemployment. So the question is, on the ball from the rest, that can be catered for if it isn't, could be in a regulation also. Or, and the legal people can say that whether there's an insertion of a word or something, that there is. And then my last one that I wanted to say, I really think we can't let the public service be out of this loop. We can't. So if we say nothing at all, we let these people that have been doing.
Exactly.
I mean, the other day we had a doctor that was operating in Mpumalanga and in Gauteng. And then I can give you a list of very many others. Whatever we do, we can't open up the floodgate here for the public service to also have no provision at all. That's what will happen. If we have nothing at all, we are saying people can make it if they have what they have. All these boards that we have in these municipalities,
local government,
I mean the stuff that they were up to, we can't open the floodgate for them. So that's my question to what Honourable Van der Westhuizen has said. I think we can
do better. So
we can do something about that. Yeah.
Just ask it. And also, I think what we also want to avoid is a duplication of processes. If a student applies to 5 universities, that all 5 universities must now submit. There are so many dangers that I see in here. The one positive that I do see in the reworded one is that now it is SAQA that will verify and not the employer. That I also want to highlight. I believe that that's the one positive in the reworded one for me.
Yep.
In the sense that it's very difficult for an employer. The other aspect that's not been addressed to my mind is the delay. Remember now, I pass all my subjects and I claim to have a degree. And I apply and I say, I got a degree in November of last year from this university. When it's often only awarded to me in April of the next year, like that.
Yeah.
So that was also highlighted in some of the submissions that we received, that there is sometimes that delay, and the delay may even be part of the quality assurance processes.
Yeah.
But just on the results that have already been released, I, in the past, would have said, I have a BA, or I have a BSc, or something like that. Because I can do my own, here's my matric results, I can see on the results that I have passed all my subjects. The fact that the final sign-off by Uma Lucy, and what we've seen with the colleges is quite often there's this problem where in certain subjects, Uma Lucy says we've been unable to release certain subjects' results, so therefore, they cannot sign off on the final results. But in my subjects, I have already received them, Uma Lucy already signed off on them.
All of it is unintended consequences that should not allow anyone to be
a criminal.
Both criminal and also, what is the word? Opposite of better off, worse off. Must not be worse off because of those things.
I think the issue of criminal that's coming in on this case, I struggle to understand, because Section 32 Capital A is totally divorced from Section 32 Capital B. It's two different clauses, got nothing to do with one the other. 32A is just put an obligation to check. The issue there is if it is there and for SAQA to verify that it is on the database, and then put an obligation on SAQA to ensure that it is there. So if the example will use of it is still in the process, SAQA will understand that it is still coming. It is, they've just written it, those results have not been downloaded, it is within the 30-day period or whatever the situation, the system will deal with that. But they will also have a heads up that it's not on their database. After this period, which I'm supposed to have it, I can now verify if it is there and follow up why it is not there. So that the learner who's affected by it can have the assurance that my qualification is reflected on the database because it is a protection for me who has the qualification to have that clarity in mind. So, Chair, there's no criminality linked to this one at all. The aspect that is raised is the issue of the employers and the board, and it is an aspect that we can just work on it and maybe use the language that was in the original section 32 capital A sub 1 where we can just tweak some of the words, but the intention to deal with it as my colleague Dr. Lloyd already referred to, which we've actually missed out on, and bring that back into sub 1, and then the main amendments that we've provided in terms of sub 2, which is dealing with the verification by SACWA, it seems as if that is not major issues raised by the committee. But the wording that is used in the original one with the small amendments to some of the wording instead of what we've put in sub 1 seems to be addressing the problem.
All right, honourable members, let's see what they come back with on that one. I'm not going to throw the baby in the bathwater. Ms. Arnold, you're smiling, thank you. That's why you look very worried about this clause. Honourable members, insofar as the entire discussion that we had here today, we are supposed to, honourable members, on the basis that you have dealt with the amendments and you have further changed these amendments. Now, because you have changed, you have brought further changes onto the amendment bill, that means that we have to take it to what is called the A-list. Am I right? Now, I want to then put to the House that there were, and I hope you're not going to ask me to go through each and every clause. No. Thank you.
We're too cold for this.
Yeah.
We're too cold for that we certainly have gone from clause 1 to the short long title. There were instances where there were no contestations. There were instances where we don't agree at all. And there was one instance where, can you bring us a reformulation? I then want to put to the House that being the case, that we move to the, I don't know why they call it the A-list.
I think, no, I'm just sort of thinking about Abelard. I think it's because it's an amendment of the amendment, A-list, and then out of the amendment, out of the A-list you get people.
Yeah.
So I think that's why.
So I want to ask honourable members that we move towards the A-list, which will take us to the B1, which is the final one that we will then consider. I want to suggest that insofar as 32A is concerned, if we... What's on the program tomorrow? I want to suggest that if the House starts at 2 o'clock, if there's any possibility that we can ask the WIP if they can spare us, inshallah, half an hour. Because I know you can talk for 5 hours. if we can spare us a half an hour so that this clause is sorted out, but that Ms. Arnold, you proceed with the rest of the A list subject to this clause being canvassed. Now, we can either get together, we can, you know, we can send the formulation to yourself,
mm-hmm.
whichever one you prefer.
Yes.
Would you want us to send it to yourself, or you want to get to just a quick get-together tomorrow afternoon?
I will send.
Once it's sent.
You know, can I ask, it was valuable for us to be able to go through this before today's meeting. And it can be sent to us before we get together, so that we can respond.
You want to get together?
If we can just get the first the draft, because
yeah, yes,
I believe that they may. Well, I do hope, I pray that there will be major changes
okay.
in the wording.
All right.
And
but
I can just
one section.
And I can just imagine that, you know, there
this
will
this
be
just 32
engagement. 32A.
Yeah.
Yes.
Your views, honourable members.
Yep. Yeah. Chairperson, I think it would be great if we could have it and then if we could quickly meet. You're saying you know us, we may drag it, but I think it's for a good purpose. We make good law. Thank you, Chair.
All right. So, Anela, what we have to do is just to make a little application to ask if they can just give us something, and it must be in G26 next door if the bells ring and... then, you know, we're there, don't take us too far away, and that we then dispense with that one. We then ask, honourable members, are we together with, we move to the A-list here, okay? Now, I sometimes get confused between, sorry?
I think it's a bit rushed.
No, it's not rushed, Wena. I get confused between how long do they take to print these things? How soon can an A list be done?
I believe 2 days.
Some shelves for nothing.
Chairperson, just a suggestion that from my experience in other committees, we do a draft A list before we give it to the printer, so the members
yeah.
can. Make further amendments so we don't, you know, waste time and stuff. So once we agree to that A list, then we send it off to the printers and then we get a B-roll. But that's how it works in other committees. Chairperson wants to do it that way.
Yeah, but how long? I
to draft the A list.
Yeah, yeah. You will have something ready for next week.
Yes.
Alright, okay, that's a big yes to everything. Honourable members, shall we leave it at ease? The secretary will communicate with you and your Dr. Nell and Papo, and you will send me just the entire draft thing. We'll go through and then make sure that everything has been covered in there, and then we move towards the A list. Now, all of you, don't disappear, any of you. Can you make sure that we see through this process? Any of you that, there's none of you that want to resign. Make sure none of you, because this thing was a weekend thing when somebody was just...
I haven't had any intention of resigning, but apparently I've been told that I must resign.
Well, can we offer him a sort of pension?
No.
Well,
no. All right, honourable
okay.
members. May I thank you very much. I think it was a good session.
Yeah.
And thank you very much to all of you. This meeting has come to an end, and can let us get out of this fridge.
I'll send it to the department also.
What's the
name?
we are supposed to we have to produce the results of the annual report that we bring back. Yeah. Yeah. Time that they collect all of this before we meet, and the Auditor General. And our dearest All right.
Van lava mayanne. Vavela since 1994.
Yeah.
1994.
What one love you to minister? Amen. Which